Next day, the Roman road ran across a flat land, crossing dikes and ditches, until at last we came to where the combined armies of Osbert and Ayla had made their shelters. Beyond them, and just visible through the scattered trees, was Jofrek, and that was where the Danes were. Jofrek was, and still is, the chief city of northern England. It possesses a great abbey, an archbishop, a fortress, high walls, and a vast market. It stands beside the river Ouse, and boasts a bridge, but ships can reach Jofrek from the distant sea. And that was how the Danes had come. They must have known that Northumbria was weakened by civil war, that Osbert, the rightful king, had marched westward to meet the forces of the pretender Ayla, and in the absence of the king, they had taken the city. It would not have been difficult for them to have discovered Osbert's absence. The trouble between Osbert and Ayla had been brewing for weeks, and Jofrek was filled with traitors, many from across the sea, who would have known of the two men's bitter rivalry. One thing I learned about the Danes was that they knew how to spy. The monks who write the chronicles tell us that they came from nowhere, their dragon-proud ships suddenly appearing from a blue vacancy. But it was rarely like that. The Viking crews might attack unexpectedly, but the big fleets, the war fleets, went where they knew there was already trouble. They found an existing wound and filled it like maggots. My father took me close to the city. He and a score of his men, all of us mounted and all wearing mail or leather. We could see the enemy on the walls. Some of the wall was built of stone. That was the Roman work. But much of the city was protected by an earth wall, topped by a high wooden palisade. And to the east of the city, part of that palisade was missing. It seemed to have been burned, for we could see charred wood on top of the earthen wall, where fresh stakes had been driven to hold the new palisade that would replace the burned fence. Beyond the new stakes was a jumble of thatched roofs, the wooden bell towers of three churches, and, on the river, the masts of the Danish fleet. Our scouts claimed there were 34 ships, which was said to mean the Danes had an army of around 1,000 men. Our own army was larger, nearer to 1,500, though it was difficult to count. No one seemed to be in charge. The two leaders, Osbert and Ayla, camped apart, and though they had officially made peace, they refused to speak to each other, communicating instead through messengers. My father, the third most important man in the army, could talk to both, but he was not able to persuade Osbert and Ayla to meet, let alone agree on a plan of campaign. Osbert wished to besiege the city and starve the Danes out, while Ayla urged an immediate attack. The rampart was broken, he said, and an assault would drive deep into the tangle of streets where the Danes could be hunted down and killed. I do not know which course my father preferred, for he never said, but in the end, the decision was taken away from us. Our army could not wait. We had brought some food, but that was soon exhausted, and the men were going ever farther afield to find more, and some of those men did not return. They just slipped home. Other men grumbled that their farms needed work, and if they did not return home, they would face a hungry year. A meeting was called of every important man, and they spent all day arguing. Osbert attended the meeting, which meant Ayla did not, though one of his chief supporters was there, and hinted that Osbert's reluctance to assault the city was caused by cowardice.